Mr. Heron, Reel 7. Now, we're talking about the expedition to lay a control minefield at Val Field, which you accompanied. Anything else during your time there? You weren't there long, obviously.
No, we weren't there long, but we had one incident there, which was, looking back on it, was funny, but wasn't funny at the time. We went on a lorry to an army base, where we had some entertainment, we had a lot of drinks, and we made our way back, and to the top of the road. The scene was that the road ran maybe half a mile away from the point where the Nissen hut with the control mining material was based. And we got out of the lorry and went on down. I was dragging along behind. I was a bit worse for wear. And during that, I tripped over, fell down, and hit my head on a rock that was just above the surface of things. So I was out like a light. Then, of course, these guys, they didn't notice me missing. They wandered off down to the Nissen hut. And I lay there, freezing solid, and eventually somebody down there realised what had happened and rushed back and picked me up and carried me into the hut and wrapped me around the boiler. And eventually I came too, but it was a pretty hairy moment. That was about all the actual incidents. Technically, the mining control were in loops attached to galvanometers, so that if anything, any metallic objects like submarines or light craft or whatever proceeded across these loops, then immediately it would show on the galvanometers and give alarms. And that was the idea of what we were actually, not me, because I was purely there as a means of communication with Reykjavik. And that was it. We weren't there very long. I went back on the Balder, and it was during the time I was on board the Balder that a very funny incident occurred, in that we had laying alongside two or three trawlers, and they were equipped what they called a steam bomb throwers. This was a thing really from prehistoric, and on one occasion, when I was on the upper deck, an aircraft flew overhead. I think a German aircraft, it must have been just a spotter, because it was flying at, well, maybe 30,000 feet, I don't know, very high. And there was a panic in the vessels alongside. And the operators of these bomb throwers jumped in. The bomb thrower itself was a tube with an attachment to some a steam pressure down below, and was surrounded by a large steel screen. Anyway, the next thing that happens is these guys are working up the pressure of the steam, and they stick a bomb down the funnel, down this tube, and it just comes out of the spout, drops straight back down again. There's a mad scatter as this damn thing went off, and two or three guys got caught with a bit of shrapnel in their backsides. But what it was supposed to do, and this was rather, I don't know how they even considered using these things, but it was supposed to send a bomb up to whatever height they could manage with this steam throwing job, and then a parachute would open and the aircraft would fly into it. Well, the speed at which all these operations took, well, it was a nightmare thing, it really was. But I thought it was worth mentioning because it was so funny. Anyway, the guys weren't seriously hurt, but it was a bit indignity afoot. Right, well, that was all. And one other incident which happened during that time was when the Hood was sunk. That would tie in some time. The same day, I was sent to sea on a trawler with some equipment to keep in touch with Reykjavik. And although they had adequate equipment, they had transmitters and receivers on board. So anyway, we were out there 5 days searching for the Hood survivors. And without success, as is well known. I think there were, in fact, only three or four survivors. But that was a terrible feeling for me, because we were at sea for those 5 days in a force 9 gale on a trawler, which I wasn't particularly a good sailor. So I spent the rest of my 5 days just propped up in the wireless office, one foot on one bulkhead, one on the other, and a bucket between my knees. I got back and they had to practically lift me out of the office, so it wasn't too good. Anyway, that was more or less the incidents in the Balder, and we then went up. We took over the Reykjavik wireless station.
What, you put ashore from the Balder?
Yeah, we were sent ashore from the Balder to take over the wireless station. There was a chief telegraphist there who ran the station and lived in the station. We were living in Nissen huts alongside.
And this is in Reykjavik?
That's in Reykjavik itself, yes. And, we had the same conditions. I think previously I mentioned the fact about these Nissen huts where they had gaps between the timber wood ends. We had the same situation here, in that it never seemed to be anything else but freezing. But we had this boiler, which was very effective if you were within a 3 foot range, but outside of that it was pretty cold. We kept in touch with Admiralty and acted on behalf of both the Air Force, the Army, and the Navy.
Were you still with HMS Baldor, or had you been posted?
Well, no. Well, I don't know whether there was an actual posting, because after all, Balder was a base ship anyway, and we'd only been moved ashore to occupy the station, and I think it was a question of still being allotted to the Balder, and that had happened to do this as part of the job. That's all I remember of my stay in Reykjavik. I can't even remember how long it was. I think it must have been no more than a few months. I got back. I will try and tie up these dates later in a shortened
We give you a thing you can fill it in on, yes.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, that was it for Iceland. Now, the next move was, of course, back to Chatham. I was still based at Chatham. And, there was one... I ought to mention one incident that happened. I mentioned previously that I was very keen on ballroom dancing. And before I went to Iceland, I actually... won a tango competition at the Lyceum in London, and won a 2 week holiday at Butlin's Holiday Camp. But they drafted me to Iceland before I could take it, and I've never taken it since.
Now, what happened when you got back to Chatham?
Let's think. Well, the next, of course, I can't remember much about that. Because, like most of those stays in Chatham, they were very, very short. And I was then on my way to the States, I think. Can you stop them?
Now, what were you going to New York for? What was happening?
Well, I was drafted... again, it was a little bit one of these mysterious things. I was supposed to do some liaison work with the American communications people. But I had... when I got there, they didn't seem to know what the hell I was there for.
Do you remember the voyage out and the Queen Mary?
Anything I do very
tell
much.
Tell us about that.
Oh, my God, it was chaos. There was because it was very illegal to be gambling on board these ships, but I always remember there was a hell of a big gambling sessions going on in the one of the mess decks. Apart from that, to my indignity, I caught a dose of crabs on the way over from the. They issued blankets that were used by the French Canadians apparently coming over on the previous trip. So I landed in New York. Had to go straight to hospital and had the indignity of being painted almost from head to foot with this junction violet. Terrible blue stuff. And so that wasn't a very good start to my trip to New York. They cleared it, fortunately, fairly quickly. But also, I don't know. I got involved in running a bit of the gambling myself. This was a game called Fraz, which is a card version of, shall we say...
F-R-A-Z.
F-R-A-Z, yes. Which is a card game of roulette. It's a card version. And... yeah, well, I was partly...
How did it work?
Well, you had four... You laid out the cards based on the four twos, two of each suit, on the left-hand side, laid out in order, spades, hearts, diamonds, clubs, and then you laid out I think it is six, if I remember rightly, six cards to the ten... That's king, ace, king, queen, jack, ten. Oh, five. No, yes. No, nine. It was up to nine. So you laid it out in sequence across the table, all face down, and then in any order from the pack. And then you started turning. You had the one in the box. You took that one up, and if it was the ace of spades, you put it in the appropriate place and took that one out. And then put that, say, to the... That was the nine of hearts. You put that in its appropriate place. So on until you... Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention that there was a joker also in the set. Until you came across the joker. And you paid out according to that... to however many cards were showing face up. And you'd pay 2-1, 4-1, or 10-1 in the case of the whole line coming up. It was a failure. I won some and lost some, but it was a lot of fun.
And that was on the boat?
That was on the boat, the Queen Mary.
Now, what happened when you landed?
Well, as I say,
I went to hospital,
yeah. I finished up in hospital, and after the hospital, I went to Brooklyn Navy Yard. The subsequent Asbury Park, which was the base for the people in New York, for all naval personnel, it was a naval-run establishment that hadn't been laid on by then. I had a very happy period. I mean,
so
I
was, where were you actually living in the navy?
In the navy yard itself, in a sort of bunk rooms. But we got away. We were allowed out on Friday till Monday. We had every long weekend. It was a bit of a holiday, really.
Now, what were your duties? Explain those easily.
Well, they were so light I can't even remember what they were. I was supposed to be liaising with the American communications, for naval communications, to get some sort of... I did have some discussions with them, but I can't remember whether they were effective or not. I got the impression they didn't know very much about me and didn't really want to know. But I was there for quite a considerable time, something like 5 or 6 months.
And what was your social life like when you got out? What was New York like?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Well, you see, the thing was, my family, who were theatrical people, two of them were actually playing in New York. One, it was playing in a show called By Jupiter with Ray Bolger. That was the one I couldn't remember before. With Ray Bolger in... By Jupiter was a show at the in 42nd Street at the... I think it was... I can't remember the name of the theatre. But I have some brochures and stuff from there, or things from the show. And also, of course, there was this fantastic place, Stage Door Canteen. And we would go there, and they'd have all have the big bands of the time. I remember Fats Waller and Harry James, and also the girls from the shows. And it was all free. It was the most fantastic thing. And of course, I had a pretty hectic social life as well. So it was a wonderful period. Oh, and we were also invited up by an MP, an ex-MP or an MP who was living up at Stone Ridge in Ulster County, had a house there, and we were invited up there as a mob from the, this was later on, there was a few more guys there in Brooklyn Navy Yard beside myself, and we were all invited up to Captain Margeson. I've just remembered his name. Captain Margeson, who was an MP or an ex-MP at the... I'm not sure whether he was currently so or it was previous to that time. I had a wonderful time up there. We were very... And overall, the hospitality was wonderful.
What did you think of the Americans? They weren't in the war at that stage, but...
I don't think they could have been. Do you know, strangely enough, I think they must have come into the war because I remember they were building these carriers, what they call them now, the banana boats. They were the banana boats converted into carriers.
Escort carriers.
They weren't escort. They had a particular name for them. I don't think it was an official name, but they were sort of small, very small carriers, so they were able to produce them fairly quickly because they were converting them from existing merchant ships. And I was supposed to be going on these as a communication staff later on in my stay in New York, but for some reason it was delayed and delayed because they hadn't got them finished. And while this was happening, there was a call for me to go aboard the Aquitania in New York. And they were then loading troops for the Middle East, American troops from the Middle East, and what I understand to be the crews for the first American tanks in the Middle East, who subsequently went in with Montgomery. So anyway, that was, I think, the end of my trip. But there were lots of things going on in New York, but I don't think anybody would be interested particularly in any...
What were you doing on the Aquitania then?
Well, I was ship's company... But I was also the only naval communications bod on board. There was the merchant navy equivalent of myself in there, but I was to keep in touch with Admiralty and various without any communications that were required in either direction.
And what were your living accommodation like?
A very, very good. I had a cabin on the upper deck. And the troops, of course, weren't allowed on the upper deck except the nurses, which was very handy for me. I had a very nice little social life up there for a while. But anyway, that's beside the point. Anyway, we sailed, having loaded these troops on board, we sailed for the Middle East via via the Cape. We were a group of five what they called monsters, which were the large passenger ships of that time. That was the Île-de-France, New Amsterdam, the Queen Mary, Queen Mary, Aquitania, of course, and one other. There were five of us. And the reason for us going together, because we had top speeds around about 30 knots, so as long as we zigzagged, we were always impossible for the submarines. We didn't need escorts, and we could proceed on this course at high speed, or as high as we estimated necessary. I thought the conditions for the troops was pretty rough on there, but they didn't complain that much.
And you were going to the Mediterranean?
And we were going to the Mediterranean. Well, no. We were going via the Cape. That was our first... Well, we went first of all to Montevideo, and then from Montevideo down south round the Cape, stopped at the Cape, at Durban, and we had that famous woman that used to sing on that... I can't remember her name now, but... used to sing all the troops in and out of Durban on the jetty. And from there, we went on up to Port Tewfik. And that's where we unloaded the troops. And we spent Port Tewfik, I don't know what it is now, but it was Italian Eritrea in those days. And... we stayed there for a few days, that's all, and we waited, in fact, for the 9th Division of us, Aussies and New Zealanders, and a New Zealand regiment, to come back from Tobruk, where the Desert Rats had been returning to Australia. And we were to pick them up at Tewfik and carry them back to Australia and New Zealand, which we did.
Anything about the voyage?
Not particularly. Any money I'd made on the trip over to New York, I lost at shoot. The Australians had a game on there, which was...
Do you remember it?
I remember it very well. We were crammed in, about 40 or 50 of us, into a very small space. Again, illegal gambling, but we still gamble. And it was a three your pack of cards. You would was laid on the table, and you were presented with three cards, and then you backed on those cards. Well, depending on what they were, you could see them. You saw the ideal hand, of course, would have been three aces, because what the bank had to do was to offsuit you or beat you in the suit that you held. And then, of course, people could also, not only the people playing, but anybody in the room could back the card of anybody sitting in the front. They could make side bets, so it became a pretty ferocious game. It's a pretty ferocious game, typical of the Aussies and their gambling. They don't like any tame stuff. Anyway, that kept us all until we all got broke, and the bank cleaned us all out, I think, in the end. But that got us back to Fremantle. In Western Australia, and we stayed there for a few days, unloading some of the troops from the various divisions, and then went on round to Sydney to disembark again some. And there, that was an interesting period. because, of course, the ninth Div and the boys from Dubrook coming back to Australia had been getting a lot of Dear John letters, because the American troops were ensconced in Sydney and various things there, and of course they were after blood by the time. And it was a sort of, there was battles raging in Sydney between the Americans and the Australian troops on their return. And I came across Hyde Park, came across one guy stretched out in his underwear in the middle of Hyde Park. But that's the sort of thing that was going on all the time.
Hyde Park?
Yeah, Hyde Park is the central park in Sydney. As of that time, I can't speak for it. Although I was in Sydney only recently, it's changed dramatically, of course, since then.
And anything else from that?
We were based in Woolloomooloo, which is just by where the current opera house is. Apart from that, no, we had a few weeks there. Enjoyable. We got some swimming and beaches and all the rest of it. And I do remember seeing this rather strange Australian gambling game. I was watching it in the park. Oh, I do seem to come across a lot of gambling in my time. But I'm not a gambler normally. But anyway, I was to see these guys standing in a circle in the middle of Hyde Park. And you'd see them bend down with their heads to the ground and then look up in the air and bend down again, and I wondered what the hell this was. And I found it was the Australian game of two up. I'm sure that a lot of the people who hear this would know that that's a... I think they still play it, but not so much. Then it was all the rage in Australia.
Did you join in?
No. I wasn't. What they do is they put, I think it is, two coins on a stick, and then they toss it in the air, and if it falls, you can either have, you know, two heads, head and two tails. It's some form of game. I didn't know how it worked, but it was some form of combination of that. Anything else in Sydney? No, I don't think so.
So, but was it back to the UK then, or?
No. We went on to Wellington then, from there to drop the New Zealand troops. Windy Wellington, as they called it. And, had a wonderful time. The hospitality everywhere we went was tremendous, Well, I had a couple of girlfriends in one place or another, very briefly. But not the sort of life one could, whistling around all over the place, couldn't make any permanent affairs. So that was it. And then we came back to the UK. And That period of my life seemed to go very quickly. I can't remember any major incidents of that time, because fairly soon after I got back, I was drafted to Leydene, which was the HMS Mercury, which was the signal school outside of Petersfield in Hampshire. While I was there, I think by that time I'd been made a petty officer, I think, then. Petty officer by that time.
And what were you? An instructor?
And I was an instructor there. Yes, I was teaching not at that stage. Yes, no, I was. I was teaching navigational aids. That was Loran, G, and...
Now, how have you learned about these things?
Well, I'd been given some instruction on it before I went, but I also had to do some work on it myself before I actually took the courses. And I had to do the instruct on the maintenance of the seaborne equipment. There was a third, which was... I can't remember the name of it. That was the one that was used primarily, but G was going out of use. G was originally used for the bomber flights into Germany,